is Just the Case, and I have a special guest today from the McSauce Podcast, Ian Sharpley. How you doing, man?
Hello. I'm very good.
Yeah. I love the solo episode that you did, you know, at my request, because I'm a Patreon member. I thought it was really cool, and it was great to get you kind of... I love open conversation with, like, several people, but it was cool because it was different because you got to actually... I got to hear your singular voice on things. I thought it was awesome.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I really appreciated you asking for it. Hey, it's my favorite topic, talking about me. So it was great that somebody asked me to do it. For those of your audience that may not listen, myself, my friend Paul, and my friend Matt all do a... It started off as a comic book specific podcast and has morphed into just sort of different interests that we have. We talk about music a lot, movies, all the different kind of things that just interest us. And we started doing a Patreon, honestly, kind of to do some different things, but also to help sort of balance out paying the bills, really. You know, doing podcasting isn't always cheap. And we also do conventions. We're all artists. So we needed something to kind of help fuel that fire. And a Patreon seemed to be the best way. And everybody out there that subscribes gets a personalized episode. You were on the cutting edge, my man. You're one of the first ones to do it. Early adopter. So yeah, it was nice to be able to provide an episode. And on our show, the roles that we have are not necessarily set in stone, but it's just the way that we all interact. Matt is a long-form storyteller. He could do a podcast all by himself, just telling great stories about his interactions with he's had a lot of interactions with different metal guys. I know that Ripper is one of the guys that he mm-hmm. has a personal relationship with. Yeah. Paul's a great storyteller in his own stead as well. He can talk for hours. And on the show, I'm more of sort of like a punch-up jokes kind of guy. That's just sort of the role that I fit into. So that you asking me to do the Patreon and talk about my art and how I, you know, grew into the artist that I am, it was really awesome, man. So again, thank you.
Yeah, it's always awesome to have people. You guys all have talents that I really dig, because, you know, I tend to be on the musical side of things, but the art you guys putting out, and your, not only that, but you guys keep forefront the fandom that you have. You always keep, like, what got you interested in it, like, as a constant reminder to the listeners that, you know, I hope someday I can actually go to, like, a convention, you know, that you guys are at. You know, I was actually going to head out to, my brother and I were going to go to this convention in Connecticut. It was the Terrificon, and I was going to get tickets, and I was like, I'm gonna go and get really cheap plane tickets and everything. Just, you know, the ticket prices started going down, and it was like, oh, you know, and everything just went awry. But I think I'm hoping by next year that I can do that, and, you know, the great thing about, like, where you're from is everything's so, like, close together, and, you know, you don't have, like, a mountain range you have to traverse, you know. It's all just highway, you know. And one of my goals at some point is stopping on the way through, you know what I mean? So that'd be kind of neat, you know.
Yeah, that would be awesome. What's really cool about our podcasting and the network that we've kind of developed over the past couple of years of doing this is coming into contact with people like yourself, and meeting Jody and meeting Paunch through the airwaves and becoming friends. You know, this is the first time that I've actually really talked to you before, but I feel like I know you.
Right?
I feel like we're friends, even though it's Heck been yeah. a one-sided conversation the entire time. Either me listening to you or you listening to me. But it's fun. It's fun to develop those kind of bonds and relationships. And hopefully, if you do get a chance next year to come through, it would be great. It would be great to meet up and hang out and talk about all the things that we really like. You know, I can see in your background there your awesome wall of all your Star Wars characters. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, man, it's awesome to share those different kind of fandoms with people in this network of podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's cool. Like, you probably heard some of the, like, the interactions I've had with, like, Ryan McCormick. And, you know, I've had Paul on the show a couple of times. And, jeez. McCormick's a funny guy, even when he's not trying to be. That guy is just so passionate about everything. And he just... we have those wrestling episodes and everything. It's just been great. And, like, it was funny because, like, you're talking about, like, you know, Jody and everything. And when he had his show and everything, and it was like, Paul's like a huge Star Wars guy, or a huge Star Wars, but also Master of the Universe. And he's just like, does that guy have a Twitter account? And I'm like, I didn't have anything, you know, because I'm like, this time I'm not going to do that. And, you know, I'm not into that and stuff. And then I was like, okay, fine, you know. And so it was great. It was the best decision I ever made. And it's cool because now it's led to this where we're able to, you know, have a one-on-one. It's awesome. And, you know, I like the big group of people, but I like the singular conversation as well. And it's great because you can really, you're not like fighting with like people, like, you know how us people in the, you know, the eastern part of this, you know, the country, we like to talk over each other to get our points across, you know.
So. Absolutely.
Well, you guys got a cool setup, man. You got that room with all the microphones and everything, and you guys are almost like the freaking who's that? Who's the one guy? Joe, what's his name? Who's the comedian? He's got his show.
Oh, Joe Rogan.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of Joe Rogan, where he's just sitting around and like, wow, that's like really tripped out, man. What do you mean?
It's funny. I wish.
Yeah.
I wish that I used to love Joe Rogan, his show, and that was a big influence on, honestly, the free-flowing conversations that we have on the show. I've been on Ryan's show a whole bunch of times, and that kind of back and forth and open end, I really like doing that. I wish we had pictures of sort of, we've had different incarnations of the studio, all kind of at mostly we have recorded wherever Paul's lived. So he lived in an apartment. We did it in his kitchen for a while. And then he moved into a house with his girlfriend and we would do it at their dinner table. And then eventually, I mean, you've heard the show, we get a little rowdy. So eventually we wanted to not take over his house every single Monday night with, you know, F-bombs about comic characters. So we moved it down into the basement, and that's where we've been for probably about 150 episodes now.
Right.
And we're down there. We upgraded our microphones. We have nice, you know, studio quality microphones. We have a mixer. So we're able to do a lot of different stuff. And since we're all artists, we like craft, and we like to do the things and be as professional as we possibly can achieve. So that was some of the inspiration about building sort of a makeshift studio down in Paul's basement.
Oh, that's great. That's cool, man. You guys got like a mixer set up. It's like I've got a little Focusrite 2-channel deal. You know, where you can run instruments or mics into it. It's got the XLR, you know, inputs there. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, I think I kind of broke it, so I need to upgrade my stuff. But for what Ponch and I were doing, I was like, hey, let's just use what we have. But I'm gonna upgrade all of that stuff eventually. So
your show still sounds great. You guys are able to have that great communication between yourself, Ponch, Jody when he's on. It seems pretty flawless, and you've got a good system going.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's kind of just dialing. There's so many people that, like, when they do a podcast, like, you know, there's people that maybe they just don't have an ear for it, or they haven't done a lot of episodes and are still trying to get their footing, and this the sound quality just is kind of, you know, and it's like I think a lot of people are afraid to, like, say I love your show, but like you've got a lot of static, or like you've got the gain turned up too high, and even if you told them, they're not gonna know what you're talking about, you know.
Yeah,
they'll be like, mm-hmm. You know, they'll have to, like, oh, does that mean I have to, like, do this? And then it's like, oh crap, you know. So but by and large, I think that technology has actually improved where it's easier for people to have good sound. So
Yeah. I know the way since the quarantine hit, Paul, myself, and Matt had to do probably a month and a half worth of shows where we were doing them remotely from our basements. And and we do this all the time, but holy crap, did it take there was a learning curve. And one of these days on Patreon, I'm going to release the bloopers of us.
Oh, like, that'd be great.
Of us fighting with each other about not knowing how to set the, you know, GarageBand app up, or Paul's mic's cutting out, or he can't attach something, or I can't connect. I have a whole bunch of different bloopers that one of these days I'm going to put them all together and I'm going to release them so everybody can. So even if you've done 300 plus episodes, we still had some problems.
Do you think that'll be a Patreon release?
Yeah, I think so. I'll release it on Patreon, but I think I'll have it be free because it's fun to just have everybody listen to it and hear us stumble around. I always like to have us. We have very self-effacing comedy that we do. Right. So anything that makes us look like total jerks is something that is probably going to go over well with the audience.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it's like since we've been, you know, all this weird isolation crap's been going on. It's like I've been able to work from home and that shaves like 2 hours off my day, you know. And so it gave me more of an opportunity to work on music. But I'm like, I got to get my podcast out there, too. So I've got like the thickest Tom Selleck mustache goatee thing I've ever had in my life. I was like, I didn't know I could grow it this thick. This is great.
It is. It's a strong, strong game that you got going there, my man.
That's great, man. Yeah, so it's ahead of my mind. I tried to get a hold of Ponch to get on this show, but he must be busy or something. But I was gonna kind of pick your brain a little bit about your personal experiences. Like when you go to cons, you got a table set up, you got some stickers and kind of swag going on. What are like some of the weirdest interactions you've had with people? Have you ever had, like, people?
Yeah, oh, yeah, all the time. I've had some very strange people. Some people that turned into fans. Some people that, I know that we, so I've done, we've been doing conventions. The McSauce Enterprise started off as a webcomic specific back in 2008. So we've been going to conventions since, I think, 2010, somewhere around there.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then somewhere around 2015, I got laid off and I was collecting unemployment and I was like, hey, why don't I try to be a full-time freelance artist? So I did that for a year and tried to make that work. So I went on, I've had experiences with conventions with Paul, Matt, myself, and then just myself. And the weirder stuff seems to happen with Paul and Matt, and we've had some interactions. There was a show down in West Virginia. It's West Virginia PopCon, and it's in this big, it's almost like a big airplane hangar sort of thing. Wow. And we were kind of on the edge of, where the presenters were done. So we could see over, and there was this real big open area where they had these people doing a live action role play. So it was sort of like a pseudo Ren Faire right across from a comic convention, which was kind of strange. We've had people come up and sort of like pretend like they're mimes to us and just not talk to us. So and the biggest thing is whenever you get interactions with cosplayers. So cosplayers, depending upon what they're dressed as, love to adopt the role of whoever they are, and it is known that you do not want to interact with two different kinds of cosplayers, the Joker or Deadpool, because that gives them carte blanche to act like a total jerk to you and do whatever, and oh, I'm just in character. No, you're probably a jerk in real life, but you're just dressed as Deadpool.
Was it like the Why So Serious Joker? That's what I call him, where he's got the lines up here. Or is it like the I'm not really the Joker, but I'm the Joker, the Joaquin Phoenix Joker?
Dude, pick your Joker. Every single Joker is a jerk. They act totally crazy. They'll come over, they'll be completely, like, the Why So Serious Joker usually is really intense and really, really, you know, talking about how they got their scars and in your face and all that. But any Joker, honestly, I've never had a good interaction with a Joker in my life.
It seems like someone who's willing to go to that length and get in character, they're probably a psychopath, I would think.
So many people can go there and have a good time and dress up and be normal, but there's a certain subsection of people where it really is, let my personality – or let this is a chance for me to act in a different way. It's like extended Halloween to them, and they right. can just act any way that they prefer. A lot, you know, you get cosplayers, and those are usually the main interactions that get pretty weird. Some cosplayers that have like the big setup, so they're almost completely covered in, you know, like gigantic furry costumes, or they're minions or something like that, and they're like bumping into people and knocking your arm on the ground and crap that. And they don't even know it, but
right.
you know, you came dressed as Dr. Octopus with all the tentacles. You're smashing everything.
Dressed up like a giant wampa, you got this huge bodysuit on. You're probably sweating bullets underneath. Man, I should have wore the talc. My back is sweating, you know.
I'll tell you what, man, conventions are, you know, I'm sad that we didn't get to go to any because we had a whole bunch of them scheduled for this year, but they get pretty, they're grueling because they're usually really hot, they're really long. Yeah. You know, you set up, it's not only on day one or maybe even the day before you go in, you set up your booth, and that might take an hour to set your booth up, and then you sit down and you got 12 hours. And you usually can't pack up or leave or anything like that. So it can be intense. And usually those are on a Friday. So people are at work or at school. And so you're just kind of sitting there talking to the other presenters or, you know, doing drawings for yourself. Or luckily for McSauce, I've got usually one of the two. If Paul isn't off on a beer run, then I got Matt there sitting with me. So we have some people to kind of keep ourselves entertained and unfortunately make fun of the passersby is usually what we do.
Is it more like a look at that guy, look at him, you know, or is it like a directly like, hey, you got a funny face or something, making comments?
We're more of a they walk by and then we create a complete and total story about how these people got here, what their life is outside
nice.
Of the
community. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we try to be as nice as we can to the faces right. of the people because they're there for fun, but we're bored. So we're trying to keep ourselves entertained during the day.
That's cool. Yeah, I've only been to a handful since I moved over here. And, you know, I honestly have never been to a convention when I lived in New York.
Really?
Not like a comic one. No, I'd get pulled into like some stuff like, hey, let's go look at car parts. And it's like, okay, you know, spend the whole Saturday. You're down at like the Syracuse State Fair. And you got to do like 50 laps around the freaking car parts. And it's just like, you know, I didn't like it as a kid too much, but then as an adult, it became more useful because, you know, I'm restoring, you know, an old Trans Am. So it really, and I took that knowledge I learned. I appreciate it now. I didn't really appreciate it as a kid. But it's like, I don't think like, I started going to conventions in Spokane because that's the closest place here. Unless you go through the Cascades to get to, Seattle. It's a hard sell. Cause like they have their Emerald City Comic Con in like March. Well, half the time the pass is closed. So what happens
yeah.
is you can get stuck in the Cascades. And
so they close it down because it's likely going to snow and yeah. and so they just close it down. Oh, that's I was going to ask you about Emerald City because that's one of the biggest ones out yep. there. And I know that it was right around whenever COVID was hitting. And I know a lot of people were upset because that was the first one that got canceled. And then the entire world got canceled. And it was a moot point. But Emerald City seems like a really awesome one if you were local, but it sounds like there's some difficulty there.
Yeah, it's a several hour drive, but it's like if you get up there, like you hit the window right, you can get up there in about 4 hours, you know, from here. Mm-hmm. But there's a place called North Bend, which interestingly enough is that's where Nintendo has their R&D center, right?
Well, that's so really cool.
And it's behind a strip mall that's there, right? And so, like, once you get into North Bend and you go through town where the strip mall is, when you go to turn in, there's a gate, a guard shack, and there's this huge iron gate in the front. And it's totally inconspicuous, right? But if you go to, like, the middle of the strip mall, in between the buildings, you'll see the Nintendo sign on the side of the brick building. It's amazing.
That's cool, man. That's and really
there's, like,
awesome.
Nobody around. It's, like, totally in the back. It's awesome. And that strip mall is actually, like, a dead mall, so.
Yeah. Like, yeah, big Nintendo guy, so, you know, I'd love to go and check out what they're developing there.
Yeah, I think the last time I was in there was they were developing the, probably the Wii. That's how long it's been.
Yeah. That's cool. So that's interesting that you haven't been to too many comic shows or anything like that.
No, I was going.
Yeah, you'll definitely have to.
I was a metal guy.
Yeah.
So that was really my jam, was going to more like metal concerts and stuff than it was comic conventions, because I didn't get back into comics, you know. And I'm really kind of on the outskirts in a lot of ways compared to you know comic book titans like yourself and Jody and my brother and. And everything, and that Jody always laughs when I use that term, but and Ponch, I mean, that guy's heck, you know. But the thing was like, I got back into it, and I'm like, well, now my son wants to go, because my son, there's all kinds of, like, Star Wars guys, and you got like a ton of Star Wars guys that show up at the Spokane one. They had like, this Hawaiian, it's a 501st Legion, the cosplay people, but it's like legit, you know what I mean? Like movie grade, like stormtrooper outfits and Vader. And my son just loved it. Like go up and get pictures, like free of charge, and they hand out these cool trading cards and stuff. Oh man, I tell you, it was, I'll always remember the smile on his face. It was the best. So it's just like, that's been more in the forefront for me. You know, because now I'm more into that stuff now, and that's kind of why I didn't really before go to any like comic conventions. I was more of a metal concert guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think about it until you brought it up. I was just like, yeah, geez, you know.
So there always seems like there's some kind of crossover with live entertainment and then going to conventions and doing some stuff like that. You mentioned the 501st people. We're friends with a whole bunch of those just from going to shows and having events at comic book stores, where we've grown to be good friends with a couple of the people. So, yeah, those costumes are killer. They put a lot of work into those things. So you know, metal guy. In the 90s, going all the different shows. On a normal year, how many shows do you think that you still go to, or has it slowed down a lot?
It's slowed down a lot, almost to a screeching halt, because, like, where I live now, it's so isolated that it's not New York, man. Where, like, in New York, you can go to Rochester, Cortland, Syracuse, you name it. I mean, there's outdoor concerts, there's indoor concerts, when I moved here, man, it's like, in a lot of ways, it's like the land of time forgot, you know, and I always used to say that. And I'm trying to think, what's the last time I went to one? We've got a minor league hockey team down here, the Tri-City Americans, and they'll have shows every once in a while, but lately, the last things I went to there were the WWE. It was a SmackDown house shows that they had.
Oh, yeah.
So I really have been doing more wrestling, you know, than anything. That was the last kind of public forum type gathering I went to before all this crap hit, you know.
Me and my wife are huge live concert goers, big music fans. This year was looking like it was going to be the biggest year for us to go to shows. We had something like 10 shows lined up for this summer.
Oh, wow.
And all, like, one by one, every single one got canceled, rescheduled. Rage Against the Machine was supposed to come, I think, next weekend it was supposed to be. And we had tickets for Rage, and I've never seen Rage before. It was one of those bands that I always wanted to go check out and see. And, you know, our summer kind of went up in flames with all this stuff. So it's a little rotten. But one thing I wanted to, you touched on wrestling. I'm not a huge wrestling guy, but I do know a little bit about it, and I'm a action figure guy. I wanted to get your opinion on it. Do you know about the Masters of the WWE figures by Mattel that are coming out? Or
I do. I've actually got. Let me see.
It seems like the perfect crossover for you. Oh, snap, look at them.
This is
holy
way
crap. That, oh man, that's awesome. Ultimate Warrior.
Yep, yeah, there's that one, and there's, like, there's the Finn Balor.
Okay. Oh, that's and really so
they're
cool.
Mixing, they're mixing the new guys with the old guys.
Yeah. You know,
they got, like, Triple H.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then they got, the Sting one's cool. They took Clawful and then gave him, like, it could go, like, the claw just goes on his hand. The nice thing about these, and my son's got a set and he loves them, you can take off the arms and the legs and the heads and the torso and mix them with the Masters figures that are coming out.
That's awesome. That's one thing that I wanted to ask somebody with kids and has an interest in them, are because it seems like they're making these not just for collectors like yourself and me, but they're making them for kids, so with that interchangeable play gimmick to them and everything. It seems like, and they're such a perfect size, just like the old Masters figures were. It seems like a really awesome toy for kids. And he's into them.
Oh, he loves them. And I got him the ring and everything. And it's cool because the ring is like Castle Grayskull. It's got the green bricks and everything. Yeah, it's really great. And like Wave 2, it's funny because my wife was trying to order these and get me a set, and like, the Walmart site is terrible. This sucks.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
We have, she's got to take them back locally. We have 10 Roman Reigns figures. And we are trying to order like two sets, one for me, one for my kid. And we ended up with like 10 Roman Reigns figures. And there's like we were trying to get the John Cena. It's supposed to be like Faker, but they made him like a clear blue, which is cool. And it's got the tape thing on his chest like the old Faker did, like the old robot.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, because like in the Filmation cartoon, he had like this. Their idea of a robot would be like a guy with analog circuitry and tape, like reel-to-reel in his chest for some reason. So they're doing throwbacks to that, yeah. But I tell you, these scalpers are just ridiculous. And like, you'll see them go up on eBay, and they're like, I guess what happened was the Masters of the Universe line, which is supposed to come out in the fall, they accidentally released those figures at Walmart early. So now you're seeing a He-Man and a Skeletor out for like $30, maybe $60 to $70 a piece on eBay, which is ridiculous. You go in a store and get them for $15.
Yeah, and if you, I've heard horror stories about people doing the pre-sale on those figures and on the Ghostbusters figures,
yes,
too.
And, yep.
And there was like, Ghostbusters figures are in store and the pre-sale people are waiting for their stuff, and it comes in and maybe it's damaged or maybe it looks like crap or whatever. So that's the one thing that's really sad. And it's highlighting the demise of, you know, us. In America, we don't have a real toy store anymore. There aren't any toy stores. There's Walmart and there's Target. There's no more Toys R Us where you could. And it also inhibits a Mattel from making those toys because it's hard to get shelf space for that stuff.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is the shelf space. And I think the other problem we have with this whole thing with the what Mattel's doing is that these lines are. I told my wife this. I said, you know what? I said, here's the problem. What's going to happen is all the collectors are going to be like, well, I got mine, right? Mm-hmm. And then those are the only people that are buying them right now. Then Mattel's going to catch up with the demand, and now we're going to clog the pegs with these. And then Mattel's going to stop making them. They're like, well, they didn't sell well enough. They didn't meet our expectations. And now we're not going to make any more of these things. And so I think in a way that the collector market really screws over the general amount of units that are sold. And it just, it really sucks. I was kind of hoping that we would have had a Toys R Us or something kind of resurge and have a decent thing, but I don't think, other than one or two pop-up stores, they didn't really expand. And Toys R Us went to more of a, well, we're not going to sell, we're not the company that's going to bear the burden of selling the toys. We're going to broker the toys for the toy companies. So it's a different setup. They don't want to acquire any of the risk like before. So.
Yeah, it's a real shame. My wife, or I worked at Toys R Us for years and years. I met my wife there. She worked there for 20 years.
My wife and brother-in-law did too. Yep.
Yeah. So it hits home for us personally. Yeah. And also we see as fans of genre and action figures and wrestling, we also see the negative effects of not having a real toy store around. It's a shame, and not being able for them to have a place to sell the toys also that impacts on the budget for marketing. The only reason why I know that these figures exist is because of YouTube and Twitter. And I watch cartoons on Cartoon Network. I don't see any advertisements for these figures, and they're so cool. I think kids would love them.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's what killed the 2000X line. The 2002 He-Man line was like, they put a ton of money into it, Mattel did. And I think it was just, and the cartoon is amazing. It's the Mike Young Productions. It's just, wow. I mean, but the timing just wasn't right. Kids weren't into it. And Mattel got skittish after that. And they're just like, when they did the whole Maddie Collector thing, it was like Scott Neitlich was the brand manager for Masters and WWE. And he was saying, he would repeatedly say that the folks at Mattel that have the purse strings, they're just not willing to give enough more budget to it because of that. And now it's like, because Super 7 got the license, now Mattel's like, well, hey, wait a second, this is our, you know, there was that movie that they talked about, which I'm like, okay, where is that? Because they pushed it back again. And now when you got the COVID stuff, it's like now the theaters are closed, and now you've got this other variable that's in, you know, to the equation that I'm like, man, I, like you just brought up, it's like the advertising is non-existent, and I'm like, how are you going to, like, perpetuate this line? And apparently they plan on, it's going to be Walmart that releases them first, and then everyone else in 2021 is the plan. And, yeah, I think it's great because they're doing the vintage card back style. Even the clamshell is the same shape, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome. And
it's really cool. It's really inventive what they're doing with those Masters of the WWE figures. Love the play gimmick where you can switch all the parts out.
Yeah.
It's so cool, and it's just a shame with the timing and the world that we live in now and the circumstances with the way that the markets are. It's going to be weird whenever things go back to, you know, quote unquote normal. What's going to be left? Like, what are the stores that are going to be left? What are the companies that are going to be left? It's just a strange time that we live in. It's so unfortunate for so many things.
I guess the silver lining in all that would be the fact that because you've had so many retailers that have gone on the wayside and, you know, have been eliminated, essentially, in my opinion, that maybe because of that, the stores that are replaced now are strong enough now where they're able to put the resources in and focus, because now you've got all this, they're the only ones left. So everyone's going to be pouring money into them specifically because they're the source now. And I mean, you know, and I think like we've got a store chain around here. It's kind of like a regional thing. It's a Fred Meyer, and they've got them in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, I think. So it's kind of a 4 or 5 state deal, and they're owned by Kroger, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got a massive toy section. I mean, it's like in Christmas time, it's insane how like the size of their toy selection. And they've got toys, like you've got the aisles, but then you've got these overarching like bridges just full of toys. And it reminds me of the old Hills.
I loved going to Hills and, you know, going into the toy section, all that stuff. Did you guys have, you had Children's Palace as well up in New York, right?
Not that I could recall, because like up in my little corner, we're like right next to Lake Ontario, and like we didn't even have a Toys R Us locally. You had to go to Syracuse.
Oh, wow.
But we had a Hills. We had like the discount chains like Kmart, Ames, Woolworth.
We had a Woolworth.
Yeah, you find a tooth on the floor in the sporting goods section, you know they.
Hills was a magical place, man. I can still smell those hot dogs and taste those pretzels. It was great, and I loved the Sears catalog. You know, Sears is gone now, but I loved the Sears catalog that you would get before Christmas, and you'd go in there and you look at all the cool toys and have all the, you know, all the new figures that came out, and all that stuff was also supported by in the fall whenever the Saturday morning cartoons would come out. And there's so much more stuff now, but it's spread out so far, and it doesn't have the same magic that it used to have. And I feel bad for the kids, because it was like some of that stuff back when we were young was so fun. You look forward to so much of it.
Yeah, and I think there's more to it than just like, well, just because we were kids. I think it was like, you had to fight for it a little bit, you know, and it wasn't readily at your fingertips. And, you know, sometimes what I'll do is you can go online and like people will have scanned the old Sears catalogs and stuff. I'm like, oh, there's a guy in a Zubaz pants. He's got a brand new guitar he's got there, because like Sears started, or maybe I'm thinking of the JCPenney catalog where the guys were in Zubaz pants and they started selling like really nice guitars and stuff. And I remember I was like 17. I'm like, oh, he's got a guitar, man. That's so cool, you know. But it was like, I remember the smell of the pages. I was one of those weirdos that liked to smell the magazines. I didn't go out of my way to smell magazines, but you know what?
Who hasn't gone in the allure of the scent of a magazine? But I know, man, I totally get it, because I have the same kind of thing with comic book stores. You walk into a comic book store and there's a particular smell to a comic book store. It's just that old newsprint, that yellowing newsprint of an old 80s or 90s comic book, that it's just magic to me. It honestly is. It takes me directly back to my childhood.
Yeah, that's great. And like, did you guys ever order stuff off, like, did your parents ever get you stuff off, like, the Finger Hut catalog? That was, like, do you remember?
I remember that. I think I tried to order, what did I try? I'm sure I tried to order something, like, X-ray glasses or something like that.
Yeah, that's great. Like, yeah. Sears had their store brand of, like, RC cars, the Lobo series. Do you remember those?
Oh my goodness, I do remember those. I think I had one of those. They were so cheap and it didn't last. And I think for Christmas one year I got one of those, and it was like this. It was a cool looking Ferrari, but it was built for speed. It wasn't built for rough terrain. And my friends got the. You remember the RC cars with the big giant wheels they had like the studs on them, and they had a lot of traction, and they had the springs where. So if they rammed into something, they were sturdy enough to hold up. And my cool Ferrari, man, it lasted one December in Pittsburgh, and it got wrecked, and it was done. It was just not really made for winter roads.
Yeah, my mom was like, we'd get like the knockoff version of stuff. Like sometimes, like, well, that's not a Lobo, that's a New Bright. You know, that thing's a Chinese.
I had everybody back in the 90s, everybody had starter jackets. I had a pro player jacket from the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
Pro player. Like, Mom, I can't wear this.
Right. I'm going to get, like, knocked out with a freaking blackjack if I wear this thing to school. You suck, you pro player. Yeah, it was like, kids would, like, man. The starter jackets that they had were like when I was in high school. I shouldn't tell the story, but I'm going to anyway.
Let it rip, man.
There was I'm not gonna say any names, but there was like there. Let's just say that there was a kid that had this jacket on, right? And what they got it at the beginning of the school year, because who doesn't want to be cool, you know? And it falls on the wrong corner, you know. And it was a Chicago Bulls starter jacket. And you know, you look at those now and those things are hideous, but it's like the sleeves had like the paneling and the white sleeves and everything. And like this kid had this jacket on probably starting in like beginning of October, right? They had it on like by like final exams by like June. They still wearing it. And I had this kid turn around and tell me in class, like in study hall, he goes, you know why? That kid's still wearing that jacket. I go, why? Because they couldn't get it off. And they sleep in it. Like, that's the way you remember that.
It was, he just loved it so much. He needed to wear it through June. Ugh.
I think it was, like, because people are so paranoid they're going to get their starter jacket stolen, so they're always wearing them, you know? Because remember, like, people would get, like, in knife fights and, like, people get shot wearing those things? It was, like, a big deal, you know?
It was. The 90s were a wild time, man. Those starter jackets, it was like a badge of like a show of status, a status symbol.
Yeah.
You had your starter jacket, and which one was it, and everything like that. Was it one that everybody has, or is it a cool random one? And yeah, man, the 90s, weird times.
Yeah, I was like, then like, remember like there you'd have like the really people go, I'm wearing Fila, man. You know, it was like Fila versus Adidas, man. You know.
I think I had a Fila time. I bought some Fila shoes. I had a Fila shirt for a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it was like the typical garb for like where I grew up was like some kid would have like the T-shirt from Walmart with the wolf on it, you know, and it's like the with the dream catcher on it and stuff.
It's like you something that you would see back in the 70s painted on the side of a van or something like that.
Yeah, man, it's a sweet airbrush, man. It's got the little window on it, you know. It's one of those do-it-yourselfer kits, those decal, you know. It's not really an airbrush, it's a big sticker, you know. There's like an episode of Knight Rider where this guy named Lonnie, and his biker gang, he mouths off to a biker gang, and he's got like one of those vans with like the sunset on it with a horse. And they hit it with chains and stuff, and they're riding a motorcycle on the roof. Hey, let's say we teach Smartmouth here a lesson, huh? Like that. And he's just like, there's nothing he could do because he's like being a jerk, and they taught him a lesson. Pop his tires with a switchblade, you know?
Don't make entertainment like that anymore, man.
No, it's great. It's like, that's what I like. I own a lot of my stuff on like Blu-ray and DVD because like, you get like the streaming channels like Netflix and stuff. They just take stuff off, and you know, I'm like, well, this stinks. That's all right. My wife got me the A-Team box set in the van. It's in like you get the DVDs out. It's got the Velcro door you open in the back, and then you just slide them out. It's pretty neat. But
that's awesome. Just over the past weekend, me and Paul watched Transformers, and on a DVD, and it comes in this silver and chrome case, and you pull it out and you have those DVDs forever. So that's a good thing about them replicating everything and having physical media instead of just doing it through streaming.
Yeah, I think that do you think that that's going to be more important to do going forward? Where do you think the streaming services are going to go with all considering all the isolation and everything?
Well, right, yeah, I think they're all being kind of falsely propped up right now because everybody's constantly looking for content. They're looking for new things, and they have so much time and are blazing through these libraries. I think that eventually in the next 2 or 3 years, it's all going to come down to who has some of the best original programming is probably going to be one poll. And then the next lane that you can have is who has the deepest catalog of things. And I think that it's looking like HBO Max has the opportunity to have a really deep bench of stuff. They already have Friends and South Park and all the Cartoon Network stuff. And if they wanted to, they could put every DC item that they ever had out there. They're doing weird stuff where they're putting out here's all the Batmans, but they're only going to be there for a month and then cycle through. What they need to do is put every animated DC movie on their service and only have it there. That's in every DC movie that ever was created on there, but only on there. And I think they could really lock down that second lane of having a deep bench of content. But everybody else, like a Hulu has some good stuff, some good original programming, but it's not really like a go-to for me. Same with Amazon Prime. They have, what's funny about Amazon Prime, they have a lot of good documentaries on there. But other than that, their original programming is kind of hit and miss. So that's kind of what I think about streaming.
Yeah, I got like the commercial-free Hulu because I'm like, I don't need to see another commercial of like Denver Mattress. I don't need to see it every 30 seconds. You know, it's like some guy with a purple shirt and split teeth. I don't need to see this again, you know. And so I was like, I got that. Like, we have all the major streaming stuff, but it's like I only watch like the same stuff. Like, they have like, you know, you've got Netflix and Amazon that have all the the Star Trek Next Generation and all that. I love watching those. I have the Blu-ray sets, but like, it's nice that they have those on there. You know, then I got ticked off because, like, I've got all the Magnum PIs on DVD, but then they Hulu took Magnum PI down. Or it was Amazon that had it. It was Amazon. And now that's like, you got to pay for that. Now I'm like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, you know. So it's kind of weird. It's like they all of a sudden they'll just start shifting and they got the licensing and stuff. But yeah, it's, do you have the Disney Plus at all? Do you have?
Yeah. We also have almost every service that's out there. We have Hulu and HBO Max and Disney Plus. And over the weekend, me and my family got together. My sister was up from New Orleans. So we got together, we watched Hamilton together, and that was fun. I've watched The Mandalorian. I really enjoyed The Mandalorian.
Awesome.
I know that. Yeah, I thought it was great. I'm excited for the next time it comes through. There are some documentaries on Disney Plus that are really cool, where they go back and they highlight sort of the beginnings of Walt Disney and the animation. And I love process and seeing people make things. So I've liked that, but outside of that kind of stuff, some of the big hitters, I haven't really, there hasn't been a ton of new content that's been on there that I've been like, oh, I absolutely need to like circle back and watch Disney Plus. So it,
yeah,
I don't know.
I think overall it's like more of a, like, it's convenient because it's all there, you know, but I think that sometimes because everything is so accessible, it's like, maybe this is just me, but you're like, well, what do I watch? It's all here, but I don't want to watch any of it. It's like, it does this weird thing to your brain, man. It was like, you know, like in the 90s and stuff, it was like, if there was a marathon on, it was like, this is great. I can watch, like, it's the 4th of July and there's a Magnum PI marathon on. This is awesome, you know. It's 40 degrees and raining outside, even though it's July, 4th of July. Okay, you know. I guess I got my weekend covered, you know. So
you touched on something that's really, it's a weird phenomenon, and it happens to me too, where I'll go on and I'll build this big old watch list and here's all the stuff I'm gonna watch, and then I have all the time in the world and I sit down and I'm looking through my watch list and I was like, I don't want to watch any of this stuff, because it's like, it's always gonna be there. Do I want to watch it now? Do I want to watch it later? It's a weird thing. So
yeah, if you get like, oh, wow, they put episodes of, they got the whole run of The Equalizer on here. Can I watch that now? Nope. That'll probably never get on there. But there's a lot of shows that I wish they would actually put on there, that, like, Hardcastle, McCormick, and, you know, like, I end up buying a box of that. So, yeah, I just been buying a lot of that stuff. But did you hear that they're going to be, I heard that they're going to remove the last three Star Wars movies as canon. They're going to decanonize those.
Really?
I don't know how true it is.
Huh. That's pretty crazy. I haven't heard that. That's really strange.
Yeah, and I'm not sorting like a news agency or, you know, I got like a text from somebody that said that. I'm like, well, that's stupid, because I actually, you enjoyed the last film, didn't you?
It was okay. I liked it. I liked a lot of things that they did, because I really didn't like The Last Jedi. So at least this, to me, counterbalanced what was going on with the series. I like a lot of those characters, a lot of the new characters, Finn, Rey, Poe. I would watch more stuff with them if that was available. But it seems like the actors just don't want to do it outside of Oscar Isaac, who's like, yeah, put me on a Disney Plus show, I'll do it.
What about, like, how'd you feel about, like, the whole Billy Dee Williams thing, or, like, the Lando, and then there was a young lady that was on there that we probably are led to believe is his daughter, perhaps. You know, they kind of hinted that they might, maybe if they do another installment, or maybe, heck, do like a TV series, or do a series of movies. I'm a huge Lando fan, so I'd love, that'd be awesome, you know?
Yeah, that the only thing that kind of threw me for a loop is, you know, Lando is a notorious playboy. That's a big part of his personality, why we love him. But
yeah.
So when he's talking to this younger lady, it can be inferred either way. Is this somebody that he thinks is a family member, or is it he trying to hook up? So it was you know, two sort of weird, you know, it's a weird thing if you take account what his personality is.
Yeah, that's true. It could be, he's kind of old now, so it'd be kind of weird.
Hey, man, Father Time doesn't stop Lando.
She'd be like 40 years his junior, you know. It's kind of weird. Oh man, I never thought of that, man. It's kind of trippy, you know.
Yeah, maybe I'm sick, but that's the first thing I was like, what's going on here? What are you trying to tell me?
He did have that glint in his eye, you know.
He did. He always does.
He always does. So I wonder if he'll want the Falcon back, you know. yeah, so we'll see what happens. But I think that Mandalorian's the best thing that they got going for him. And I really do, and I will stand behind all day long that's probably the best thing thanks to Jon Favreau and company, that's the best thing that they have done probably since episode one. I love episode one because it's solid. It has Qui-Gon, and it was your first Star Wars film before you got that you've had. I mean, since Return of the Jedi, and they didn't have any other properties besides the books, you know. So I would say that Mandalorian is probably the most solid thing they've come out with, you know, maybe even since the original trilogy.
Yeah, the Mandalorian just felt like Star Wars to me. And I know on our show, we've gone round and round with Matt. Matt has very strict rules about Star Wars. It's got to be this big theatrical release. It's got to be like this and that. He's got these buckets that are so strict. And I'm like, man,
yeah.
Does it feel like Star Wars or doesn't it? Did it entertain you or didn't it? I think we fundamentally disagree about some things, what is and what isn't Star Wars.
Yeah.
But I was entertained. I know that every Friday night, not only myself, but my wife was like, hey, turn on Baby Yoda. Let's get it going. I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait for the next iteration, the next season of The Mandalorian.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I mean, I hope we get to see some of the other Mandalorians like that kind of came out there. And I remember I went back and watched it, and then like they're in the background where it's got you've got them sitting in the back after they had kind of like the quasi bruja there, and and it was like, how many are there? And you know, it's like the different helmets and stuff. It's great. So the way I understand it is they relocated to a different location, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm really fascinated by there's that general that has the black saber? What do they call that?
Yeah, it's like the dark saber or something that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a little
bummed out that they kind of moved away from the Werner Herzog character, because that was kind of cool to have like lower stakes as well, where it was more personal, I felt, that whole struggle there. And to get rid of him, I thought he was kind of a cool character. But, the whole expanding in the universe, you get to see different bounty hunters and different planets. And I know Matt's like, oh, it's, you know, the villain of the week or the planet of the week or what are we doing this week. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of cool, dude.
Yeah, because that's why I like Star Trek.
yeah, and I guess, and I like Star Trek and he doesn't. So maybe, that's some of the disconnect there.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I was like, I was talking to my brother-in-law yesterday. I was just saying, like, you know, Star Trek has this huge, very rich, there's like 60,000 hours of content you can watch for Star Trek. You've got all the movies and TV series, and plus the books. You've got the comic books. You've got all these things that, you know, just the very nature of it is great. And the thing is with Star Wars, you've got the movies, and now you have the cartoons and everything, and you have the books. But I think, honestly, the books are so great because, like, if you read, like, the Darth Bane trilogy, those kind of books, it's like they're written, it's written by the author who was actually, he was in the military. So he knows about, like, hand-to-hand combat, and he knows about, like, just the dangers of being, you know, in a fight like that. And, you know, I just thought it was great. Did you ever read the Darth Bane trilogy? Did you read that?
No, I never read that.
I highly recommend it. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I'm trying to think. I recently got on Audible. It was one of the first books that came out. I forget exactly. It's one from the early 90s. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's the one that introduces General Thrawn. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly what the title is of it, but I really enjoyed it. It was a while ago that I listened to it, but yeah, I'm a little burnt with the movies right now. I still like some of the Star Wars content coming out, so and The Mandalorian really sort of ignited a new fire in me with the Disney's ability to produce something that I felt was Star Wars.
Yeah, and the thing I liked about it was, like, you didn't have to worry about, like, any kind of, like, agendas or anything that I could pick up. It was just a Star Wars film.
Mm-hmm.
Just make a Star Wars film or a Star Wars TV show. Just do that, please.
Yep.
We don't need any of this other crap. And it was great because, you know, I really like the, you know, I like the Marvel stuff and everything. And, you know, I like the Spider-Man films, like the newer ones that they've done. Those are great. But I think that kind of stuff, I think that those films are, we saw the best, I think, that they're going to offer. And I'll just go out and say that because Iron Man's gone. You've got, you know, it's like he was leading the pack and, you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll put my foot in my mouth. But I think with the theaters being impacted, man, that's really going to, I don't think anyone expected to have this go on for as long as it has. And I never even thought about the theaters being impacted by this and how that their content would be produced. And what, well, Stranger Things is pushed back from what I understand. And, you know, I was like really looking forward to the new season and everything because I never watched it when it came out. And then I got caught up. I watched season one and two. Like, my wife and I crammed it into 2 weekends, right? Then we rolled on to season three, and it was like, man, all right, well, got to wait another year now.
That's a little similar to how I watched it. I watched the first season. I just watched it. It was just by myself. I watched it. I really enjoyed it. And then when season two came out, for whatever reason, I never got back into it. I just let it slip. So last year when season three came out, my wife started talking to me, and I'm very guilty for putting on weird TV that my wife hates and she never forgets. So I'm like, do you want to watch Stranger Things? And she's like, yeah, put it on. And in a week we blazed through season two and three. So it kind of that, like, those seasons meld together for me, probably in a similar way at one and two do for you. Yeah, it's a shame. I was driving by our local theater just yesterday, and I looked up, and on the walls outside of the building, that's normally where the new release posters are, and it was all crap from February. And I'm like, yeah. Oh man, that's such a bummer. But who knows when it's going to be safe enough for moviegoers to go back, and what kind of content is going to be offered to us? Because a lot of the distributors are like, hey, we'll see you in 2021.
Man, yeah, that's crazy. So I guess we'll just have to strike out on our own and just subsist on whatever remnants are on the streaming channels, you know. Like I said, for me, I go older, and I'm like, what haven't I seen yet? And you know, I'm going back and watching, like, all the 80s action stuff, and there's a lot of MacGyver episodes I never watched. There's, like, you know, I watched the A-Team and that kind of stuff. Never, some of those I never got to see every episode, so we're watching those. And it's great, you know, being able to fill the gaps. Airwolf is awesome, and I love it. It's so great. It's great. I love it, man. It's great because Jody and I always laugh about, like, season four is, like, freaking horrible. And it was done by Atlantis Productions, which was, like, a low-budget studio out of, like, British Columbia. And, like, Barry Van Dyke is on there. And then Dick Van Dyke was on there as Mail Duke. He was this villain called Mail Duke, and he was an old man that was a cyborg. It's so bad.
I'm not super I know what Airwolf is, but I'm not super familiar with the Airwolfiverse, so maybe I'll have to go and check it out. What streaming service is that on?
I don't think you get. I think it's on Hulu, but I think you might have to pay for it. It was on there for free for a while, and then I bought the Blu-ray set. But yeah, it was like the first three seasons were like espionage, like international espionage, and Stringfellow Hawk was looking for his brother. His brother is MIA, right? And so, like, this group called The Firm sent him over seas to go get back this helicopter, which was Airwolf. The creator of the helicopter, I'm such a nerd, Charles Henry Moffett, stole the helicopter and went over to the Middle East, right? And he was a mercenary doing stuff for, like, the oil tycoons over there. And so they sent Hawk to go get the helicopter back. So Hawk gets it back, and he's like, I'm not giving this helicopter back to you. Help me find my brother. So that was the start of the show. And then, you know, he's like, I'll do whatever you want, you know, as long as you help me find my brother and get him back, then I'll give you the chopper back. That was kind of the whole thing. So it was kind of a light plot, but it was great because that helicopter was like so cool looking. Even by today's standards, the helicopter was ahead of its time, and that's probably why I like it so much.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But it's really short lifespan, you know, but yeah, that's my nerd rant for the day on that. So
guilty pleasure with Airwolf.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But no, anyway. No, this has been great, man. And I gotta admit, I am so behind on podcasts. In fact, your solo one was the last one I listened to. And it's a good one
to leave off on, man. It probably shook you to your core. His podcasting can't get any better.
Yeah. Nice. No, it was great you reached out to me, and I was busy working on this car trying to get it done and everything. And no, this was great. And yeah. I've got one that I'm gonna put out, and then yours will be the next one. So I kind of got behind on releasing them, but yeah, it's cool, man. We hit all cylinders on this. This is awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I had a really great time. Thank you so much. I'd like to come back on some other time if you'll have. And so this was awesome. And yeah, I'll make sure to, you know, give you guys your props on an upcoming episode. So thanks again, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, everybody, check out the McSauce podcast, Ian, Paul, and Matt. Great stuff. They're way more productive than this podcast is. I hope to change that. I always say that. But yeah, you guys are on like Spotify and Apple Music and all the major outlets you can think of probably at this point, right?
Yeah. Where you can find us on Podomatic is where we host, but you can also find us on all of our episodes are on Apple Podcast. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, and you can find us on Spotify. And the one thing that is cool about Spotify is that, and it doesn't happen at a lot of other places, I'm not sure why Spotify does this, but Spotify has all of our episodes in a row, which for some different very boring reasons we had to take down a whole bunch of our episodes and re-upload them. But you can find them all in a row, and what's kind of cool for me is you can see the progression of our logo. So in episode, you can see it from episode one till current day, how it's transformed and it's changed. And it's been like the different seasons of our show. You can kind of tell by the logo. So yeah, check us out. I'm really, really thankful to come on here and talk to you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, guys. Yeah, that's pretty much all we got and all I have. So yep. Any last words?
No, man, just keep doing what you guys are doing. Keep all the great 90s nostalgia talk and good toy talk. I was excited to come on here and do that with you, and I think we accomplished that tonight.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up, and you guys stay safe out there. All righty.